thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Every day.
Here's John Williams.
Felt good about one yesterday. Mark your calendars. This is John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3.
Lord have mercy.
Saturdays 10 to noon on social media, WGN King John. Don't miss the Mincing Rascals podcast. We record it on Thursdays. We'll drop it today at 5. Everyone's doing it.
A friend of mine said the president is cuckoo bananas, and I said that is so unfair to bananas. Now we don't speak anymore.
If you're not yourself these days.
That is, my friend and I don't speak.
Because of stress from the daily news cycle.
I still talk to bananas. Wait, I don't talk to bananas.
You may have politosis.
They don't pick up, so now I just text them.
It's time to try Eurelium Life 9000.
Eurelium. Is that the Sterigenics people in Willowbrook?
No. Eurelium Life 9000 is the all-natural wonder drug made by an ethnically blended group of scientists wearing white lab coats in New Jersey.
Will it make this news cycle anxiety go away?
Oh, it will.
How will I take this wonderful new product? And please tell me it comes as one of those things where I shoot warm water in one nostril and it comes out the other.
Try Eurelium Life 9000 as a pill, capsule, gel cap, liquid, IV, eye drop, ear burst, time release arm patch, suppository. There's the experimental home epidural kit, or you could use one of those things where you shoot warm water in one nostril and it comes out the other.
Hooray!
Side effects include weight loss, weight gain, and wait, don't tell me. Some patients have also experienced bleeding, wheezing, heaving, stinking, and uncontrollable winking.
Uncontrollable winking? I'd like to try that.
Then try Eurelium Life 9000. Say goodbye to political anxiety and maybe hello to a fun new side effect.
I'll tell my banana. His name is Henry.
I'm a little worried about her. It's 110 on WGN, and Eurelium Life 9000 is the all-natural wonder drug that cures your politosis. Not too much politics on the show today, however. Although, speaking of things that end in ium, Millennium Park's summer film lineup has just been announced. I want to start with a little public service announcement for the Millennium Park summer film series. Then we'll move on to some other serious things I want to talk about on the show today, including a visit with Dr. Natalie Marks, a veterinarian who's coming in about something that maybe your dog or cat should be taking. Stay tuned, pet owners. Ray Kaplan comes into the studio to talk about student debt. Here's a very interesting preview. I'll just tell you about it, and then we'll actually play the audio in the 2 o'clock hour. Last time Ray Kaplan was on, the attorney who addresses student loan debt, people were calling in. One woman called in, and her family was in debt for two student loans for her two students to the tune of $400,000. They owed $400,000 in student debt. One kid was in for $250,000, one was in for $150,000. Welcome to med school in the United States of America. And the parents co-signed these loans. Another lady called in, and she was originally in debt for about $160,000. She now owes about $70,000, and she said, and I'm on Social Security. And Ray said, you should not have to pay anything. The laws forgive loans to people whose income is Social Security. The lady goes, what? She said, call me. She did. The lady now doesn't pay $638 a month. She pays zero. That's not an ad. That's just the laws, and it's sad to me that people don't know about them. So Ray comes in at 2 o'clock to talk a little bit about that, and also just a couple of other changes about colleges these days. She'll talk to us a little after 2 o'clock. Then Raja Krishnamurthy at 2:35, the suburban congressman. Listen. The Cubs are very excited about their deal with, and you might not be, but their deal with Sinclair TV. They'll have their own sports network. There'll be an upcharge on your cable bill. In other words, starting next season, to watch the Cubs on TV, you will have to pay. You might not even have a choice, but there will be an upcharge on your cable bill to watch Cubs. Right now, you can watch it essentially on free TV. And people are very upset about that. The Cubs did not have a good spring before the season started, and then things didn't get a lot better. But Raja Krishnamurthy and another couple of congressmen and women have signed a letter to MLB saying, wait a minute, you're doing what? They're acquiring all of these regional sports networks. Baseball has an antitrust exemption, and they said, you know, you guys are getting so big and unwieldy that maybe we need to revisit that, which is the biggest red flag there is for baseball. The congressman talks to us at 2:35 about what he thinks should be done about those deals with sports networks. That's at 2:35 with Raja. Okay, I just wanted to mention, because summer will happen, the most depressing thing for me is to look at the 10-day forecast on my phone, and it's still not getting very warm. Brenda and I were going for a walk along the lake yesterday, and one of us, it wasn't me, burst out a mini angry tirade about the weather. It's like so cold! I know we were walking along the lake, but it should not have been that cold! The other one of us just looked on with a sympathetic smile, validating her feelings. The Pritzker Pavilion, though, this summer will have their annual Summer Millennium Park Summer Film Series. So when you go to Millennium Park in Chicago, and you really should, doggone it, I don't know where you're listening to me right now, but it is a world-class asset, Millennium Park, and it's right there. And so much of it is free, and it is utterly doable. Take the train into Union Station, or drive in and park underground, or helicopter in. I don't care how you get here. So at Millennium Park on Thursday nights at 6:30, beginning June 4th, here's the lineup. June 4th, Black Panther, the most popular film of 2018. On the big screen, you on a lawn sneaking a wine or a beer. June 11th, Frida, starring Salma Hayek as the Mexican artist Frida Kahlo. June 18th, Love, Simon, the 2018 hit about a teenager coming to terms with his sexuality. June 25th, Wonder Woman. A powerful princess leaves the all-woman island of the Amazons to help win World War II in this 2017 superhero smash. July 2nd, The Wiz, the 1978 musical. July 9th, 10 Things I Hate About You. July 16th, Moonlight, R-rated 2016 slice of real-life Miami. It's part of a double feature. That night, July 16th, they'll play two. After that, Pan's Labyrinth, 2006, visually splendiferous. July 23rd, The Music Man, the 1962 version. How about that? July 30th, the film version of August Wilson's Pulitzer Prize-winning Fences. Remember that movie? August 5th, Inside Out. August 6th, The Muppet Movie. August 13th, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. The following Thursday, My Big Fat Greek Wedding. I'd go to any of those. I'd go to there if they weren't playing any of them. That's the lineup for the Millennium Park Summer Film Series. Walter Jacobson's commentaries are heard on WGN Radio Thursday mornings. I watch him cobble away for hours, for days, each week, just outside my office, putting together the thoughtful commentaries that he's come to be known for over the years. You may have also heard the news that Walter's wife suddenly and tragically passed away the other day. Walter's in our studio, and I asked him to come in and talk to us a little bit, and we'll do that next. You may have heard or read online or in the Chicago Tribune that Walter Jacobson, the legendary TV anchor here, his wife passed away, Susie Graham Jacobson. Bob Goldsboro in the Tribune wrote, Jacobson died of complications from a head injury March 31st at a rented home in Wellington, Florida, after falling the previous day while walking her golden retriever. Lucky, her husband said, which is, it's not ironic. It's all tragic. And Walter is sitting here. Hello, my friend. It's good to see you.
Hi, John.
How you doing? Know, how you holding
I'm
up?
I'm doing okay. You know, I'm usually on the other side of a discussion like this. And when you and I talked a little bit about it yesterday, and you said maybe we'd like to talk about it here on the air, I thought, no, of course not. It's personal. It looked like I'm looking for sympathy out in the world, and that's not what I'm here for. But then I realized that talking about things is somehow helpful. It distracts me from the bad memories. It was really bad. So I appreciate the chance to just come in and chat, and I'll pretend we're not on the air, okay?
Well, that's your gift, sir. So let's just, do you mind telling me a little bit what happened that day? Was it that simple? She was walking the dog. The dog jerked the leash. She fell down, hit her head.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Susie is in Florida for a couple of weeks every winter. She's a competitive equestrian. There's a big horse. What do you call it? A festival.
Yeah.
Just outside of Palm Beach. She goes every year. She rents a condo for a couple of
weeks. She's been a great athlete her whole life. She was a national class tennis player, the captain of the Yale team. Keep going.
Captain of the new Trier High School team, too. And
which may say more about her prowess, actually.
That's right.
She was a good tennis player. So what happened?
So she goes to Florida every winter for a couple of weeks, and she competes. She's a jumper. She's jumping 3 or 4 feet, which is pretty exciting. She's 62 years old. She was very proud of her ability to do those kinds of things at that age. And she loved the horses so much. Anyway, I drive down with her and then fly back and then go back there to Florida a couple times during the 2 weeks. She called me Saturday night, 2 weeks ago, and said that she had taken Lucky, who's an 80-pound frisky Golden, loves other dogs, for a walk, and Lucky noticed a dog across the street, and it was his way. He lurched forward. Susie was holding onto the leash, and Lucky's strength pulled her off her feet, and she fell and smashed her head on the sidewalk. And when she called me, she said she was doing okay. She had a headache. I had a black eye. Her nose was swollen. I said, I think you better get to the hospital right away. But it was impossible for her to do that. She didn't know where the hospital was and how to get there.
Beyond that, maybe she didn't think it was that serious.
That's right. And she said that she's just going to take a couple of aspirin and go to bed, and we'll talk about it in the morning, which we did. She called and said she slept well. And was feeling better. Some of the swelling had gone down. She'd been icing it. And then we said we'd talk later in the day. From then on, John, I called 5 or 6 times during the day. That was Sunday. And there was no answer. At about 9 o'clock, I really got scared. So I called the police. They went in, and they found Susie on the floor, dead. And the dog, Lucky, was at her side, seeming very restless. The police sent the dog to an animal care center, and they sent Susie to the morgue. And the next day, I received a call from the county coroner, who said that what happened to Susie happens often, that we don't know about. She said to me that when she hit her head with such force, blood that was inside her skull leaked out into a little pocket between the skull and a membrane of some sort. And when it is at that time happening, that the person who was hurt doesn't feel the pain as much. That covers the pain. And then the next thing you know, they're dead, just like that. So that's it. Susie's gone. And, what I'm most sad about is that she's going to miss things. If she knew that people like you and friends of ours were so concerned, it would really have made her feel so good. She was kind of shy about that kind of stuff and insecure about all the things that she had accomplished in life. And
no kidding, really. I would not guess that.
Yeah, you wouldn't guess it knowing her, but boy, I guessed it. And this would have been a wonderful opportunity. If she could see the outpouring of concern that has come to me, I would have made her feel so good. And, she had a good 20 years ahead of her to love her horses and our dog and compete, and that's gone. So that's what I'm so sad about.
How are you and your sons doing?
Well, I have 4 children, and they have been coming in from, they're all across the country. None of them lives in Chicago, New York, and California. And they and their spouses have been coming in for 2 or 3 days and staying to help me kind of get through this. And that's been very helpful, too.
Yeah. You live in Chicago.
Right.
She was at a rented place in Florida, just there. You don't have a house in Florida.
No. Oh, I wouldn't want to live in Florida. Not only do I like the heat, but I don't like the politics. Yuck. But it is a gorgeous place.
Yeah.
And she had a little condo kind of with a lake nearby so she could rest in the evening and see.
I was a little surprised to see you back at the place where you office up here working again the other day. I guess that's Walter, isn't it? Jump back into the work.
I think that's what would keep most people kind of distracted from the pain at the moment, get involved. I'm not here full time. I'm, in a sense, retired. I come in and do a couple commentaries a week, like the Walter's perspective, and that keeps me alive, keeps my head working. I think that's really important. You know, they say people who retire sometimes have problem getting along without anything to do. I think that would be me. I mean, I like to get out on the street. I take long walks and see what's going on in the neighborhoods. And the politics, my God, you know, this was one heck of a month with Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle.
There you go again. Now your mind's going back to work. I'm trying to talk to you about Walter, but we don't have to talk about it anymore. Except that I said to you when I saw you in the hall the other day, I hope that you are talking to people. I don't like the idea of you being back in your place here in Chicago by yourself. I hope and trust that folks have reached out to you, that you're availing yourself of that, and that you're going to be as well as you can through this, too.
I thank you for that, and that's true. I have been doing that. If somebody wants to talk to me about it, that makes me feel good because I can distract. And it's just good. We all know this. It's good to talk out problems.
It's so random, Walter. It's so young, and it's so, I want to say, strange. I mean, the dog jerks the chain, she falls down, hits her head, and the next day she's not here. Right. But I'll tell you, I know of instances where something just this random has happened. Somebody falls off their bicycle, or the dog pulls the chain. You hit your head, you think, okay, I'm going to be all right. Maybe you're not. I guess one takeaway would be, take that seriously. Even if you're okay, don't be a hero about it. Go to the doctor.
That's very good, John. Really true. If you can get an x-ray right away after a blow to the head, you don't have to have this happen.
Yeah. Well, and in her case, maybe she wasn't being stubborn. That's not where she makes her permanent home. She didn't know where the maybe ER was, and she thought, I'll be fine.
Right.
Had somebody else been there, maybe it would have been different, but maybe not. It was just so random.
Yeah.
Well, all of our sympathy to you and to the family. You've been soldiering along like such a trooper here, and so I just hope that you continue to be part of our radio family here.
So kind of you, John, to care. That's great. Thank you.
Stay well, Mr. Jacobson, and I'll look forward to your next commentary on Mr. Cochran's show, and you've been kind enough to visit with us on this one, too. Steve, I printed out the story about the beer truck.
Yeah, the Modelo truck, too. Not just any beer.
But the story I found in the Sun-Times was this, the Chicago Sun-Crimes here says a beer truck was stolen in a Southside Jewel Osco Thursday, da-da-da-da-da. The last sentence of a short five-sentence story is the truck was recovered shortly before noon Calumet City with the beer still inside.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So it just was like a stolen Uber ride, I guess. They didn't.
If I'm going to steal a vehicle, I'm totally stealing a beer truck. But I'm not doing it for a ride.
Right.
I'm like, we're going to park it here, and then we're going to take all of the beer, and we're going to drink the beer. That's why you steal a beer truck.
Or maybe just a little bit so they don't think you've taken any.
You know that
something.
You know the Bright Side of Life segment that we do on Fridays?
Yes.
So I did it here in Chicago for years. When I went to Minneapolis and did radio up there, I did it up there. And one of the things that happened when we did the Bright Side in Minneapolis was every single Friday, a guy would call in. And every single Friday, he would tell the producer, just tell him it's Hammer. I didn't know anybody named Hammer, but that was a nickname he decided to go. So I'd hit the button and I'd say, Hammer, you're on the air. And he would say the following words, I'm driving a beer truck. And every Friday, he would call in to the point where a couple of times he didn't call in and we worried, like, what's happened to Hammer?
Right.
Did he get sick? Did he die? Did he move? Where's Hammer? And then a few weeks later, hey, John, driving a beer truck. And I think a lot of us thought, what's better than driving a beer truck? Even if you don't get to drink all the beer, just driving a truck and I'm rambling around, handing out beers, the best thing.
How often do people call up and say, we're going to the potluck on Sunday?
No, don't do that. Don't make fun of my Minnesota roots.
I'm not making fun of them, but that's what they're known for, right?
Driving a beer truck, John.
Going to the potluck.
So the beer is still in there, which makes this the dumbest vehicle heist in the history of heisting vehicles. We invited Dr. Natalie Marks into our studio. She's a veterinarian where, in fact, we take our dogs. Daisy is still with us, the Dizzy Dappled Dachshund I sometimes refer to. Dr. Marks, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You guys do great work. At Blum Animal Hospital, Animal Care?
Animal Hospital.
And it's, what's the address on that? I know it's a few blocks from Wrigley.
Clark and Belmont, 3219 North Clark.
Yeah. You guys just do a terrific job over there.
Thank you.
There's a few things I wanted to talk to you about. By the way, with all of the busyness that comes around at summertime, particularly in your neighborhood and mine.
Yes.
I don't know. That's more stressful to dogs and maybe more exciting to dogs, too. But do you have any advice for people when, for some reason, their dogs get a little more stressed?
Yeah, I think the first thing that's really important is understanding your dog's body language. So we sometimes assume that all of our dogs want to be social and they want to be touched and they want to be out and about and at festivals and outside Wrigley, but that's not true. And so I really encourage people to understand when a dog is anxious. So if their ears are back and they're crouching down, their behaviors are slower, they're hiding behind you, they might be yawning a lot, licking their lips, that is a sign of anxiety. And that doesn't mean we just keep pushing forward and letting a lot of people come and approach them and get into their space. We need to recognize that that's their way of communicating, I don't feel good in this situation, and we need to come up with different strategies.
That's so interesting, because I put Bingo in the G7 action stroller, now with mesh canopy, and I would push him around Wrigley Field. And they have some of those indoor-outdoor bars there.
Right.
So sometimes he and I would sit, and we'd have a pop. And people would come up, and they'd see him sitting there. And they'd say, oh, a wiener dog in a stroller. Well, I wasn't thrilled about that scene, but that's the only way my dog could get around, because he didn't walk well. So for him to get any fresh air, I'd put him in the stroller, the G7 action stroller with mesh canopy, and we'd sit there and get some fresh air. But people would stick their hands into his space, and I was always navigating that situation, you know?
Yes.
I didn't want to say, no, you can't touch my dog, and most of the time you could, but I knew it would just take one bad incident, and I'd regret it.
Well, and, you know, the thing is, it's actually National Dog Bite Prevention Week this week. Interesting that you say that. Well, the reason it's really important is because we're seeing so many more bites in homes with kids and then out and about, because we are a social society with our dogs. We love being out and, you know, just like you, enjoying a cafe or going to the dog parks. And we have to feel comfortable saying, you know, I'd prefer that you not touch my dog.
Suppose I do want to allow it. Do you have advice for how a stranger should approach the dog in that situation?
Yes. So the first thing is they really should ask you, is it okay for me to touch your dog? And then you need to look at your dog and make sure that those body language tips I just said are not happening.
Ears right? back, licking lips.
Right. Yawning, crouching down, making slow, deliberate motions, tail tucked. A lot of those things. And then the best thing is to say, you know, my dog really likes to be touched here, and steering them away from things that are sensitive, like the face and the feet. So maybe on the back gently, or on a hip or a shoulder, a place that's considered not really a sensitive area for a dog, and show them gently how to do that before they approach.
When I reach out to any dog, I always sort of do it palm down. I sort of offer my hand, like mm-hmm. we were going to walk out onto a dance floor. Is that a strategy that's worthwhile?
I think some people are comfortable with that, but I really kind of enjoy the analogy of, you know, if you are not a person who likes to be hugged by someone who you just met, right? I'm a toucher, so I like to shake hands and hug people. Some people aren't like that. If you are one of those people and someone approaches you and all of a sudden gives you this big bear hug and you don't know them, it usually feels pretty uncomfortable and awkward. And especially if they come to you again after you show body language that you don't feel good and they do it again, your stress level is going to rise. And dogs are communicating through their body language, obviously can't communicate any way else. And so if they're doing that, we need to be respectful of that and understand that they're not feeling good. And that anxiety escalates sometimes to what we call reactivity. Reactivity is when a dog reacts adversely in a situation that would be considered normal. So that's when a bite happens. They're being touched in a way they don't feel good. They're showing signs of anxiety. We're not acknowledging it. We're letting that behavior continue to happen. And then they react.
About that, Dave had a comment or an observation. Dave, you're on WGN. What's your strategy here?
Good afternoon, King John and your guest.
Hey.
The next thing you should do is get down to the dog's level, either get it out on one knee or both knees, because canines really don't like to look up at things. They feel fairly threatened, okay? But as long as you're eye-to-eye to them and then reach out, most times they don't get real nervous.
That's an interesting strategy, Dave. Thanks for the call, and let's let her comment.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some validity to being at a dog's level. It's not always possible in some of our little Yorkies and small breed dogs. The other thing, though, is that dogs really don't like to be addressed directly in the eye on first greeting. So in fear-free strategies, which is a new initiative where we're reducing fear, anxiety, and stress in dogs and recognizing their emotional health, we like to approach them parallel. So if a dog is facing forward, I'll approach them parallel to them at their shoulder, which is usually the least stressful place for them. Mm. And so we're kind of at their level, paralleling their universe, but not really approaching them in a way that's confrontational.
Speaking of dog stress, 312-981-7200. You can call or text 312-981-7200. Pardon me for using this interview just for my own personal purposes, but maybe other people can relate. When we travel, my dog doesn't eat that well. I suppose for obvious reasons, right? It's just a different circumstance. Somebody else is there or she's being sheltered. But mostly my son or a neighbor will watch the dog. But our first question when we call is did Daisy eat? And she'll take a day plus off from eating. And I hate that scene too. Now, I know that there's a product on the market that is it new?
It is. It's relatively new, yes.
What's that?
It's called Entice. So your stress when you travel and Daisy not eating is very common. We hear it all the time. And like we were talking about, it's not only stressful for your dog for you to be away, but the flip side, it makes your travel a little more stressful because you're wondering, is she eating? What can we do to get her to eat? I feel so bad. I left her. All those kind of things. So inappetence, which is when dogs are not eating, whether they're not eating completely or they're decreasing their appetite or maybe their eating patterns change, can be from lots of different things, but stress and anxiety is one of them. So for dogs that are really affected by that now, we also have something that's actually an FDA-approved appetite stimulant to help them in these stressful times.
It's kind of funny because most dogs don't need any help eating, right? Because dogs just eat.
You'd be surprised. Really? There's quite a few picky dogs out there, and it can be really stressful on the human-animal bond. I have a lot of clients that come in and are having to hand feed their dog, or they're celebrating that their dog actually ate one meal. Don't have that problem.
No. Daisy, Daisy's a rescue. You know Daisy, and she's skittish around me anyway. She's great around other people and Brenda, but I happen to live there. So part of her life is filled with anxiety, and sometimes she won't eat unless we hand feed her, which I think is ridiculous. My attitude is eventually she'll come around, but that's a hell of a way to live. So what we would put this in the food?
We'd actually give it directly in her mouth. It's just one of the different strategies out there to help her eat.
How long before it would stimulate the appetite?
Sometimes within 24 hours.
Really? So if we were traveling, we could give her this liquid.
Yep.
And the next day she'd be a little more hungry.
Yeah, it's a really interesting way that this medication works. There's a hormone in a dog's body called ghrelin. They just recently discovered. And that hormone actually tells the brain that they are hungry. So for dogs that are anxious, if they're struggling with that, and for people out there that struggle with anxiety, I'm sure they can relate that when you're feeling anxious or stressed, there are changes in your body where they suppress your appetite and you don't feel like eating.
Sure,
so if that's happening for these dogs, we can help override that. Nutrition is so important. And if your dog is to the point where it's taking several days for them to eat in an anxious event, this is just one of the strategies that we can use to help them have a much better experience for not only your dog, but also for you when you're away.
And I'll bet you I know what you're going to say about this. So what we do when the dog doesn't eat is then we say, okay, we'll give her salami. We'll give her something that is maybe more appealing, but not necessarily healthy.
Well, two things there. Yes, sometimes that can cause changes in their GI tract or pancreatitis or lots of other things. But also, the thing is we're not really addressing the underlying problem. And that's something that veterinarians, we've had to relearn. Because in the past, like I was saying, people call and say, oh, my dog's not eating well. And I'll say, oh, well, sprinkle some Parmesan cheese or try something from the table. But what we really weren't addressing is why they weren't eating in the first place. And that's much more important.
So where the dog has anxiety, and this, what's this stuff called?
This is the appetite stimulant. It's called Entice.
Does everybody have this now?
It's in the U.S. And so you can talk to your veterinarian about it.
Okay,
exactly.
The circumstance would be after surgery, my dog didn't want to eat.
Yes.
We're traveling, the dog doesn't want to eat. I don't know, whatever the heck, 4th of July.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Exactly. So lots of different things. Things acutely, like you're mentioning, different stresses that they've had, but also we're using it for chronic diseases. So dogs that have kidney failure and heart failure and inflammatory bowel disease and cancer.
Do they have something like this for humans? Because I know some people, for a variety of reasons, are not interested in eating and should.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't know for sure if they're working on it. They certainly should be. But what a wonderful thing for geriatrics, right?
Oh my gosh,
if we could come up with something like this.
Yeah. Or maybe just go ahead and give it a shot. Just take a mouthful of it.
I'll let you do that.
That's the silly talk show host, not the accomplished veterinarian being silly. Do not do that. Okay, more calls and texts for our guest. The number's 312-981-7200. Dr. Natalie Marks is here. You got a question about how to better interact with, or your dog can better interact with? In fact, the next call is, okay, it says, what about dogs interacting with other dogs? We talked about somebody coming upon your pet on the street and they want to pet it. How do you handle that scene? What about when there's two pets? Next on WGN. Okay, so we're talking about this, stuff with Dr. Natalie Marks. If your dog is especially anxious or for some reason their appetite's gone away, you give them this entice and it will entice their appetite and get them eating. I suppose if they eat and eat healthier, it's a better chance that they'll overcome the illness or whatever it is that's bothering them anyway.
Absolutely.
We were also talking about just how you deal with dogs who are stressed because they're interacting with people or other pets. For instance, let me just see what, I think that was Diane's question. Is that right, Diane? You're on the air. Hi.
Yes, I am. I had an incident, a couple of them actually, where someone thought my dog was aggressive when he actually was very friendly and could interact with other dogs very well. But these were dogs that didn't know the proper social behavior. And the first time they met my dog, they were off leash and ran toward him and wanted to be there instantly. His first reaction was to back up a little bit. His second reaction was to give a little grumble. And then when finally the dog jumped him, he kind of lashed back without drawing any blood, but said, this is unacceptable.
Yeah, okay, hold on. This whole scene, what do you have to say about that?
You know, Diane, I'm sorry that happened to you. It happens more often than we want it to because people aren't obeying the leash laws in the city. And your dog did completely normal communicative behavior for him. So having two dogs approaching him while he was probably on a leash and had a barrier is very threatening. He gave, it sounds like, social cues to those dogs by backing up, lifting up his lip, growling, whatever other signs he probably was showing. Those dogs were not paying attention, and he did react. I don't think that was necessarily inappropriate behavior on your dog. That's actually very normal dog behavior in that instance.
Two dogs on a leash, though. We're approaching each other on a sidewalk. What should the owners do?
The first thing is to watch your dog's body language, because that recognition of dog body language early on can save so many incidents between dog to dog and also dog to people. So if your dog is starting to show those signs of anxiety, and again, ears back, lip curling, tail tucking, making themselves small, yawning, all those things. Big thing, yawning is a sign of anxiety. Your dog is not tired. Your
Isn't
dog
that interesting?
Is anxious.
And I want the other owner to recognize that, because you go, oh, my dog's friendly, he wants to visit. But if that dog doesn't, it's your obligation to pull away.
That's right. And that's okay. I think the other thing we have to understand is not every dog needs to be a socialite and be all over the city and every dog park off leash. Not every dog wants to be like that, and they don't have to be like that. You can enjoy them.
30 seconds. Let's just take another quick question about this whole arena. Christina, what was your situation? You're on the air.
We have a rescue, and he is anxious around all other people except for our family. He loves my children. He loves people that come by on a regular basis. But anytime we have somebody wants to have a play date or we want to have guests over, we have to lock him up, and it seems really, you know, he's more comfortable there. But is there something like doggy Prozac? Is there something, a long-term drug that can maybe take the edge off of him?
Yeah, so that's a loaded question and very good question. So really quick, rescues take quite a bit of time to adjust to situations and to trust. And he, with the expectation you need to have, he may never be okay with a lot of people at your house or play dates. That just may be him. But if your goal for him and your family is to be able to participate in these, it will take some time. It's going to take some behavioral modification, working with a trainer in your home and understanding what triggers he has to these guests. Is it motion? Is it noise? Is it their behaviors towards him? And also working with your veterinarian on different anti-anxiety strategies. There's some natural and also some pharmaceutical working together.
You're not against
that can help.
A pharmaceutical pharmacological remedy to this.
I am not, because anxiety is an illness. We know that in humans. We've had a stigma in veterinary medicine for a long time, and we know that's not the case anymore. So there's a combination therapy that's really helpful.
Dr. Natalie Marks from the Blum Animal Hospital in Chicago. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
This was fun. My phone lines are ringing more for you than the normal stuff I do. So why don't you come back sometime?
I'd love to.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
How about that?
Here's John Williams.
We got so many texts, calls, and comments about our last guest. We'll have to have her back to give you assistance with your pets. This is John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio here weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. The number one podcast in Chicago is ours. It's called The Mincing Rascals. Everyone's doing it.
A friend of mine said the president is cuckoo bananas, and I said that is so unfair to bananas. Now we don't speak anymore.
If you're not yourself these days.
That is... my friend and I don't speak.
Because of stress from the daily news cycle.
I still talk to bananas. Wait, I don't talk to bananas.
You may have polytosis.
They don't pick up, so now I just text them.
It's time to try Eurelium Life 9000.
Eurelium. Is that the Sterigenics people in Willowbrook?
No. Eurelium Life 9000 is the all-natural wonder drug made by an ethnically blended group of scientists wearing white lab coats in New Jersey.
Will it make this news cycle anxiety go away?
Oh, it will.
How will I take this wonderful new product? And please tell me it comes as one of those things where I shoot warm water in one nostril and it comes out the other.
Try Eurelium Life 9000 as a pill, capsule, gel cap, liquid, IV, eye drop, ear burst, time release arm patch, suppository. There's the experimental home epidural kit, or you could use one of those things where you shoot warm water in one nostril and it comes out the other.
Hooray!
Side effects include weight loss, weight gain, and wait, don't tell me. Some patients have also experienced bleeding, wheezing, heaving, stinking, and uncontrollable winking.
Uncontrollable winking? I'd like to try that.
Then try Eurelium Life 9000. Say goodbye to political anxiety and maybe hello to a fun new side effect.
I'll tell my banana. His name is Henry.
That whole bit sounded like a lot better idea when I wrote it. But thank you all. And remember, you should not suffer from political anxiety. We're not today, but I know that some of you experience a lot of stress because of the student loans that are in your lives. Either it's yours or maybe you co-signed for your kids. We have in the past invited an attorney in town into our studio to talk about that. And Ray Kaplan is back here on WGN. Hi, Ray. How have you been?
Hi. Great, John. Thank you.
There's a lot of things on the sort of docket I want to address with you today. And one of them goes back to a conversation we had last time you were here. Do you mind if I play back a call?
No, not at all.
Okay, so this was last time you were here. We were just doing the usual visit with Ray Kaplan where people were calling and talking about their student debt. And we hear stories from people who call in from anywhere from one woman, $400,000,
right.
$250,000, and $150,000 call. And then all the way down to, say, $30,000 or $40,000. like that's nothing. This was one of the calls that came in the last time you were in our studio.
I, too, have a boatload of Parent PLUS loans. I'm wondering, after paying for so many years, I originally started out with about $128,000, and I'm now at $65,000. And my monthly payment is still killing me at $678.
What's your annual income?
It's about $75,000 now with just him.
Hold on. What do you have to say?
Do you also have an income?
Just Social Security and a small pension.
So here's the thing. You actually are eligible for $0 monthly repayment.
Huh?
Yes. Because your Social Security and retirement income are not the type of income that, as per the statute, that you're required to have them base the payment on. So because that's your income, now you don't want them to take into consideration your husband's income, and there's a way to apply for that too. You likely are eligible for a $0 monthly repayment until the balance is forgiven. And that's exactly the type of thing that people don't know about, John.
So that was you and a caller on last time you were here.
Right.
You remember that call?
I do.
Did she call you?
Yes, she did. She did. And actually, we see that pretty often now.
Talk more directly into the microphone.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
We do see that actually more often now, in that we have a lot of people who took out Parent PLUS loans. They're retired now, and they have Social Security income, and then they have some other retirement or pension income. And when they calculate their payment plans for their federal student loans, they're not sure what income is supposed to be submitted to allow the servicer to calculate their payment, and they're submitting too much. It's stuff that income that's not required to be submitted. So when we recalculated for her, she actually was eligible for a $0 monthly repayment until they forgive the balance.
So what is she paying per month now?
Zero.
She went from $678 a month to zero?
To zero, right. Because her income, if you remember from the phone call, she said she had a very small pension and Social Security. That's her income. Social Security, they're not allowed to take that into consideration for purposes of calculating the payment.
So if she and her husband were paying $600 and some a month, I wonder, I presume their son or daughter was also paying? I mean, because they co-signed on a loan.
Well, what they did was they took out Parent Plus, federal Parent Plus loans.
So does that mean the student doesn't pay, they pay?
Exactly.
This was their loan, in other words.
Exactly. The student's not responsible for it, just the parent.
Maybe the student had some other financing. But
the student did have other financing.
Really?
Yes.
So whatever that poor kid is carrying,
yeah,
the parents were also carrying $168,000 is where she started.
Right, right. And that's a really tough payment, $670 or so a month on a fixed budget, a fixed income, just on Social Security. And
so you got it
pension.
Down to zero.
We got it to zero.
That is amazing.
Yes, I know. I was very happy about that. And we do see that more and more now. We have a lot of clients where we're recalculating their payment plans, getting them $0 a month. And there's no downside. Their credit's good. They're current in a good standing.
Right. This isn't Chapter 11 or chapter anything?
No chapter. It's just non-bankruptcy student loan law.
Okay, the number is 312-981-7200. If you have a question or comment about the student loan debt that you or your kids or grandkids have or you're carrying personally, that's why we're here. The president, I don't know if this was Donald Trump's idea or DeVos's idea, but anyway, the administration has an idea that colleges should have to reveal to students what the prospective earning would be
right,
based on the degree they're getting.
Correct.
What's your reaction to that?
I think that that's a good start. There are so many misconceptions and misunderstandings on the parts of people who are borrowing all of this money to go to school. So the new requirement for universities and schools is that they have to show students, let's say you've already chosen your major and your major is going to be, for example, sociology. They have to show you the average yearly income for somebody with that degree. So a sociology degree, let's say that the average yearly income out of school is $35,000 a year. And then they're tasked with making you or illustrating to you that you're going to be taking out probably $100,000 in federal student loans, giving you what the potential monthly payment's going to be. And then you can make a decision. Does it make sense if I'm going to be making $35,000 a year to take out $100,000 in federal loans? Should I choose this major?
Reminds me of the nutrition and calorie information on menus.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but really, I mean, I don't know that that's federally mandated. Maybe in some states it is, but I know that when I walk into a restaurant on the menu or up on the board, they'll have the calories right there. On a menu, they might have the sodium content. And
right. Some know of what us you're getting.
And some of us don't want to see that. But if that makes sense there, it sure as heck makes sense here.
Right. And I one of the other things I run into all the time is that students don't realize that interest continues to accrue even while they're in school. They seem to be under the impression that no interest is accruing while they're in school, but interest starts to accrue right away. So even though it's a fixed interest rate, your loan balance is not going to be the same when you took it out as the day you graduate. It's going to be higher.
There was a bill that failed in New York State this week, and it was if you are a Gold Star child, that is, your mother or father died in service, that your student loan would be forgiven. And it didn't pass, so they decided it was going to be too expensive. I believe that was the thrust of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something akin to this that we were talking about, right?
Right. That's part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, Section 11031. Student loan discharges are no longer taxable income if it's discharged under something called TPD, which is total permanent disability, which just means that you're disabled to the point where you can't work. And if you can have a doctor sign off on that, your entire federal student loan balance will be discharged. Now, you really can't work. And I think there's a period of even 3 years after the discharge is granted where if they notice that you're working, they'll revoke that discharge.
They see you driving a cement truck. Well, this happens all the time with disability claims, but this isn't for veterans per se.
No.
Anybody.
An injury on the job. What if I just have chronic arthritis and I can't do my job anymore?
Right, then you're eligible for a TPD discharge. And it used to be that you would be taxed on that forgiveness. But now, because of that that Jobs Act, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, you no longer will be taxed on that.
Okay, so two things. First of all, I didn't even know that if you're completely, I mean, it makes sense, but I didn't know that. If you're disabled and you're having trouble generating income, then the loan's forgiven.
Right.
But in the past, they would say, okay, we forgave $80,000 of debt. We're going to count that as income. Now you owe $20,000 in taxes.
Here's a huge tax bill.
Now they're not even going to charge you the taxes.
Now they're not going to do that.
Who knew that?
Yes. And that bill, actually, it expires in 2025, but Congress can renew it. So that's very good news. And also, anybody who gets their loans forgiven under public sector loan forgiveness or teacher loan forgiveness, that is also not a taxable event.
Okay, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Ray is here, Ray Kaplan from the Kaplan Law Firm. She's been a guest on this show many times. You may have heard her commercials as well. This is not a commercial. This is us asking Ray to come on and talk some more about some of these issues that I know are near and dear to some of you. Ray Kaplan's in our studio, the attorney in Chicago who practices in the area of, is it always student loan relief?
Student loan law, and we also do bankruptcy law. All of the stuff we're talking about today, though, is non-bankruptcy. It's just student loan law.
I think that's a point to make. That's a critical point to me, because I think people hate the idea of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe they should, but, you know, look, utilize the laws that are written to your advantage. If you need it, there's no shame in that. Do it. But if you don't have to, don't. That's not even what you and I are talking about today, right?
Exactly. It has nothing to do with bankruptcy.
Derek, you're on WGN Radio. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Talk to us. What's on your mind?
Well, my wife has a bunch of student loans, and she's paying over $750 a month. And I'm just wondering, I think they're private loans. I don't know if there's any way to make them shrink and reduce the interest, anything.
Well, with private loans, it's really a whole different animal. There is no statute that governs just private loans, but a lot of times, so we're pretty much restricted by what's in the contract, and there might be a way to get the payments lowered. We would have to take a look at the contract and see. Another thing that people do, which is getting a lot of popularity nowadays, but you know, we would have to analyze whether or not it's a good idea for you in your situation, but there is something usually we can do to negotiate a reduced balance, but there's a process to it, and it's not for everybody because it involves possibly defaulting on the loans. But there is a way for us to negotiate a reduced balance on private loans.
So do you have any, is it public loans and private loans? Is that what we're talking about here,
right,
one
so
versus the other?
Right. So we're talking about, in this gentleman's situation, he has a loan with a private lender, maybe Discover or Citibank. The statute that we were talking about before is, and you know, total permanent disability discharges. That's only for federal loans. So that's loans that you owe to the Department of Education. And they're usually serviced by Navient, Nelnet, Fed Loans, Great Lakes, those guys.
When you guys went shopping for money for college, Derek, did you think about that? Do you have one of those loans as well?
It was just her. I never went to college.
Yeah, your wife we're talking about here, yeah.
She didn't know. I guess she didn't have anyone help her, and she just went to a place and got student loans and didn't know about federal loans or grants or any of it.
Join the club. I mean, you know, none of it. We're 18, and our parents maybe didn't know anything about this, and they say, hey, here's our bank. We'll loan you the money, or here's the credit card. We'll loan you the money.
Does she have a cosigner on those loans?
No.
Okay. So then that kind of puts her in a better position to negotiate a settlement, too,
right,
just in that there's not somebody else that's going to be affected negatively.
Derek, good luck to you guys. By the way, the phone number is 312-294-8989.
Yes.
312-294, as in the Tri-State Tollway.
Right.
8989 is what if Mike Ditka were driving on the Tri-State Tollway.
Exactly.
Or just go to your website, which is
financialrelief.com.
All right, Derek, thank you for the call and good luck to you. Felix, you're on WGN. Hi, Felix, what can we do for you?
Yes, sir, how you doing? Love your show.
And
thank
you,
I'm calling just to ask a question. My wife, she's got a student loan, which she occurred before we got married. And she every year has to file for a forbearance because she doesn't work herself.
Oh, well, then she's probably eligible for a $0 monthly repayment without having to use up all of her forbearance and deferments that she's eligible for.
Right, and every time that she calls them, they're always asking them about my income, but my income is the only income coming into the household.
Right, and there's a way to do this under the statute where she does not have to disclose your income. So they can ask, but you, under the statute, she doesn't have to disclose her spouse's income unless you guys have a spousal federal consolidation loan, which it doesn't sound like you do.
This reminds me of that Social Security call last time.
Yes. It looks like she's going to be eligible also for a $0 monthly repayment. I have a client like that right now who's married to a physician. And she's in a $0 monthly repayment, but that's just the way the statute works.
Wow. Okay. All right. That's very interesting. Thank you for listening to my question. I will pass that information on to her.
No problem. And then after a certain period, it's depending on if she's in the private sector or public sector, she's going to be eligible to get the balance of the loan forgiven, even though she's made zero payments. So definitely something to check.
Correct.
Yep. 312-294-8989. You're going to remember that number, Felix?
I wrote it down, John. Thank you very much.
Oh,
love
boy.
Your show.
I appreciate it. Listen, I don't need to editorialize here. Good luck to you. 312, I somehow feel punished for absorbing the $200,000 cost of my son's college education so he could graduate debt-free. I somehow feel punished for absorbing the $200,000 cost of my son's college education. I don't know. What you have something to say to that?
Well, I would say don't despair, because it's highly likely that the payment can be reduced to something that's so manageable if it's a federal loan that you won't feel like you're being punished anymore.
Okay, we're out of time. There was one other thing, though. Did we get to?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Under that Jobs Cut Act, they also set aside $350 million for, you remember those articles in the New York Times where everybody was being denied public sector loan forgiveness? Well, this is specifically for people, it's earmarked for those who met the requirements for public sector loan forgiveness otherwise, but happened to be in the wrong payment plan. So if you had the wrong payment plan and you were denied, it's worthwhile now reapplying, and we can also help with that, or you can do that on your own, but there is money set aside for those people to get their loans forgiven.
One last thing here, just real quick, Ray, 630, what is teacher loan forgiveness exclamation point?
So there are some requirements, but you have to work for a public school, and you get at least $17,500 knocked off the balance of your loan if you work for full-time for a public school. I believe there's also a requirement as to the subject that you teach. It has to be math or science related.
But isn't that true about firefighters? Anybody that works in the public sector, isn't it?
Yes, but there's another special category for teachers who work in the public sector who get an additional. So let's say we're working with $50,000. We can knock that down to by another $17,500 and then recalculate the plan based on that new low balance.
Isn't it interesting that it's very easy to get your hands on the money? It's this labyrinth of rules and regulations and hoops to get some sort of debt forgiveness.
Right.
That's why you're there. Ray Kaplan, the website is
financialrelief.com.
And the phone number is 312-THINK-CHICAGO, 294-THINK. Hey, I'm driving down the Tri-State Tollway, 294. Who's sitting next to me?
Mike Ditka.
8989. Thanks, Ray. It's nice to see you.
Thanks, you too, John.
We got us a color television set, and I was watching it last night, and lo and behold, there were not many people sitting in the seats at Wrigley Field. And I thought, wow, I wasn't so wrong after all. A lot of people who bought tickets to the game last night chose to not go or couldn't go because of the weather. I was suggesting yesterday at this time, and I know a lot of you are anxious for me to go back there, just for a second. I was suggesting that they move the game up a day early. That would have been inconvenient or inconsiderate to other people who were planning on going in the evening the next day. But since it was going to be cold and rainy last night, but the day before it was going to be sunny and warm, why not take advantage of that day while both teams are in town?
I will concede that the crowd wasn't there last night, so that part of my argument was wrong. Perhaps that they wouldn't have made as much in concession, so you've got me there. But it's still not a good idea.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I was able to persuade you.
Well, I mean, you know, you still change your pitching rotation, all of that stuff. And
I believe my response to that argument yesterday was, well, I got to change my pitching rotation. I'm a manager. What'll I do? Maybe you'll manage. I don't know if you have your tickets yet to see Thomas Jefferson, but I'm going to be on stage at the Classic Cinemas Tivoli Theater with the third president of the United States, May 18th. And I do hope you come. This is my civics push. Oh, wait, it'll be a really fun, enjoyable, funny hour or so where I come on stage with Thomas Jefferson, we chat, and then you get to ask questions too. If you ever thought, boy, I'd sure like to know what the founding fathers think about this, legalizing marijuana, having a graduated income tax, legalizing sports betting, all the things we're going to do here in Illinois, I wonder what Thomas Jefferson would say about that. You get a chance to find out. To say nothing of what he thought about owning slaves or whatever the historical question may be of interest to you. Tickets are available at WGNradio.com/Jefferson. WGNradio.com/Jefferson. Do get a whole bunch of tickets right now. I wonder what he thinks about giving a bunch of money and concessions to these great big developers to build something in Lincoln Yards. Kristen McQuarrie is an editorial writer and columnist at the Chicago Tribune, longtime member of our Mincing Rascals, at least once upon a time.
Until she broke up with us.
And then she found other things to do. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, are you speaking in, like, the Thomas Jefferson vernacular?
No, that was me just getting all wound up.
Okay, yay.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm surprised. I guess I'm not surprised, but this whole Lincoln Yards thing to me at first seemed just kind of wonky for the people that even know what a tax increment financing district is. And lo and behold, everybody seems to get their head around it. We're going to give a couple billion dollars in tax concessions to a developer who is going to build something that's going to cost around $6 billion. Is the issue about this development on the Northwest side that we shouldn't be doing that at all, or is it the size of the development? What's got you bugged in your column today?
What has me bugged is that TIF districts, the vehicle that they want to use to spur economic development, their original intent was for blighted areas. The TIF district allows developers to come in and have their property taxes, their assessments, basically frozen for 23 years. And whatever they spend as the value of the property grows, whatever is owed, gets pumped back into the TIF district. So basically they get their property assessments frozen, and then whatever money they put into their own project increases its own value. So that's money that is lost to school districts and libraries and everyone else who would normally get to appreciate the value of the growth in that property.
What would they say to that, Kristen? I mean, I understand why TIF districts, at least on paper, exist. And you're right, to help pump private dollars into areas that won't otherwise go. But if you have these concessions, then it makes more attractive. That area was going to be developed no matter what. That's prime commercial real estate. So why did we give it to them?
I mean, that's the big question. They will say that in this case, they are going to invest money in everyday infrastructure that the public is going to get to use. Three new bridges over the Chicago River, a huge redesign of an intersection that's really clogged over there. So it's not like they are just going to be buying planters to make their own little property look pretty. They are going to do some massive infrastructure that otherwise taxpayers would have to bear. My problem with that is that we're still talking about very specific sides of the city and restraining tax dollars that would go to CPS, which affects the south side and my side of the city and my property tax dollars. I'm never going to use these intersections. I'll probably never even see Lincoln Yards. But they are going to get a huge property tax break along with this other development that is going to spread the tax burden around to the rest of Chicago. I just think it's an old economic development tool that gets abused, and to me this is an example of that.
When we did the Missing Rascals, Justin Kaufman was in today, and he said that it was almost a density issue for him. It's going to too much alter the way people live in that part of the city. It's just too much there. Is that a concern of yours or no?
It is. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me to allow so much more density and to justify it by unclogging intersections that are going to be even worse once you add all that density. So, I mean, there was talk at one point of having like a public park and more open space, and they never really came around on that issue. It's already a dense area, and so you're going to make it more dense and then throw everybody a bone by redoing some of the roadways that encourages more traffic. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, they're on the hook for a couple $100 million. It's not like they don't have some skin in the game that we would all benefit from, right?
Well, Well, if you live on the north side, I suppose, they do have skin in the game, but they're not going to walk away from this project. This is probably one of the most attractive pieces of real estate possibly in the country, maybe in the top 20. And so the idea that we have to throw so much, we're talking about like $900 million in tax incentives to a company that is going to make a ton of money off of this project. I just don't know that they really ever got around to completely justifying it.
Respond to this. This is a private developer who wants to put people to work, build up an area that's sitting vacant, and they are putting millions and billions of dollars of their own money into it. This is private investment that, of course, needs some sort of public assistance. If you build a football stadium, they'll build you your on-ramps. So that land is just sitting there, Kristen. Why should we not encourage this kind of private investment?
We should encourage private investment. I'm saying that the natural marketplace, that land would be purchased and bought and developed. Why do we have to entice private development, give them a TIF district that's going to freeze their property taxes for the next 23 years?
Okay,
and again, it's not blighted. Go back to the original intent of the law. We're not talking about the South Side or the old steelworks plant that needs redevelopment. We're talking about some of the most hipster, attractive real estate in the city.
Are you going to take back the Schaumburg Yards thing that you put in your column?
No, actually, I stole that from Alderman Osterman, so that doesn't even belong to me. That's his, but there is some criticism that it just doesn't have a lot of character, the development, but really, I'm only caring about the bottom line.
These planned developments always have a planned feel to them, and it might be slick and awesome, I mean, because of course it is, right? I mean, the Riverwalk that they're developing out my window looks really slick, but also Disneyland would approve of the sort of stuff they're laying down there, and that's just the way it goes. So I don't know what to make of the aesthetics, right? If it's going to look new and coordinated, I don't know that we need to bristle at that.
Not necessarily. I mean, you must also like the streets of Woodfield, which is like, you know, kind of a manufactured townhome-looking development in the middle of a bunch of expressways. And I honestly, I don't care so much about how it looks.
Yeah.
I just think TIF districts, original intent, blighted property.
Okay,
and they have been buying property. They've been buying property since maybe like 2015 or 2014 at the site. So this has been a long-term plan for Sterling Bay.
Last question then. Are we having this conversation if they hadn't exercised that, if they weren't using it as a TIF district?
I wouldn't care.
Then the
I
money,
care.
Because
I,
then the
I,
money comes to the schools and everybody else, right? And you don't live there, so it's not your problem.
Right. And they'll argue that this is not tax dollars. It's their own money that they get to reinvest in the project. But it's money that would otherwise go to taxing bodies, that because it isn't, the burden gets spread around to the rest of the city.
We've invited them to join us on the show. I hope they can next week. First thing, I'll ask them to respond to some of the things you've said, Kristen. It's always a pleasure to hear you and read you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me on, and I look forward to the Sterling Bay's response.
That's hopefully going to come up on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, sometime next week. This is John Williams on social media, WGN King John. That means you can find us on Instagram and Twitter. I posted a pretty funny picture on Twitter today of a postage stamp stuck to my nose. I hope you'll enjoy it. My wife chuckled at it, and then she said to me, "Aren't you glad you married someone that chuckles at stuff like that?" And I said, yes. WGN King John on social media. And don't forget WGNradio.com/Jefferson to get tickets to our Thomas Jefferson show. I wonder what he would say about what Congressman Raja Krishnamurthy is up to. He joins us on WGN. I've got about 6 minutes for you, Congressman. How are you today?
Hey, John. How are you?
Are you co-signed a letter to the commissioner of Major League Baseball, correct?
That's right, yes.
I read the letter and then some of the attachments. I can't say I understand all of this antitrust language that baseball enjoys, but you guys, if I understand correctly, are saying that these regional sports networks that the teams, baseball, hockey, basketball, the NFL, these regional sports networks that they're starting to own is an area of concern. What are you guys doing here?
Yes. So perhaps your listeners already know, but the Walt Disney Company recently completed the purchase of assets from Fox Entertainment. for a like $71 billion transaction. But in order to win approval under the antitrust laws, they agreed to divest about a little more than 20 regional sports networks owned by Fox Entertainment. Now those regional sports networks are subject to an auction process, and Major League Baseball is one of the bidders. And the big concern that is being expressed by folks is that Major League Baseball will end up owning these regional sports networks and thereby having a monopoly over the broadcast rights, the television broadcast rights to those games.
Gosh, where have we heard that?
And, you know, essentially the net is a concern about an increase in prices that fans have to pay to access those games on television.
So is this Sinclair and the Cubs?
Yeah, so there are several bidders, but Sinclair is one of them, and Major League Baseball is another. What's concerning is that in the auction process that we're seeing right now, which closes in a short while, basically the bids have been much lower than expected, in part because of a concern about what Major League Baseball will and won't do, or the teams will and won't do with regard to the broadcasting rights. So, you know, in other words, there's a possibility that, you know, Major League Baseball, you know, could engineer a sale of these or the purchase of these games and these broadcast rights, in part because they're on the other side of the transaction.
Well, the way we were, I've got to kind of scratch my head here, Raj, but it seems to me like the Cubs are going to be in partnership with Sinclair. They're going to have their own network. It'll be carried, say, by Comcast. Comcast is going to give me an upcharge if I want to have Comcast. I'm going to have to pay for the additional freight they're carrying, which will be the fees that the Cubs and Sinclair will pass along to them. And so the Cubs win and Sinclair wins, but I don't win because I'm not having to pay for the games now, and I don't want my cable bill to go up.
Well, that's right.
So,
and if I can just jump in real quick, you know, someone might play devil's advocate and say, well, John, you don't have to watch the Cubs. You don't have to buy that cable package. You can just walk away. But that's where the antitrust exemption for the National or Major League Baseball comes into play, because it was granted 100 years ago to Major League Baseball with the idea that Major League Baseball was entrusted with the stewardship of our national pastime. And in part, that means allowing fans to have reasonable access to these games, both in person but also over time on TV.
Well, would they argue that this is reasonable? I mean, I don't know that you'd win that argument. Maybe somebody would say, Congressman, that $5 more a month to watch the Cubs and all of the other fine Cubs features, the first 10 games of the season notwithstanding, is reasonable. Is that the hook? Is that what you're hanging this on? What's reasonable?
Yeah, I mean, you're right to point out the 3-8 standings for my beloved Cubs, and I think the same is with the Sox. But I think that it partly boils down to it, but I think it also boils down to the idea of, well, if you folks are going to have a monopoly on the broadcast of these television, on the broadcast of these games, then, you know, perhaps we should revisit the idea of having an antitrust exemption in the first place. And so, yes, there is somewhat of a bargain that the Major League Baseball League had made with the American public a long time ago, which is that they get an antitrust exemption, but in return, they have to, you know, be very careful in the way that they exercise control over access to the games.
Well, that was before there was television, so they couldn't have anticipated all of this. What do you think's going to happen then? I mean, if you all, so now you're asking for a bunch of documents from MLB, they're going to get them to you, you all have hearings, but if this went the way where you said, no, you cannot do the deal with the Sinclair, then what happens? Are you going to try and keep those very kinds of deals from happening, Congressman?
Not necessarily. I think that it goes back to that antitrust exemption that I was talking about. That is constantly under scrutiny in Congress.
But they love that, don't they? I mean, that's the holy grail for the MLB.
That's the holy grail. That's the holy grail, and that is kind of, as you will, the leverage that Congress has with regard to the game. There's all kinds of things that happen with regard to the commercialization of the game, as you know, and things that were anticipated 100 years ago and things that weren't. But one thing is for sure, which is that they have the antitrust exemption now, regardless of what's evolved. So the question is always, should they keep it? And there's a lot of people who say they should not. I mean, they should not have the antitrust exemption.
Do you have an opinion about that?
I think that, you know, it makes sense to the extent that they, you know, reasonably govern the game and treat players properly and so forth and treat fans right.
Okay, but let me cut you off here, Congressman. If you're going to leverage that antitrust thing, saying if you guys want to still be the beneficiaries of those kinds of laws, but then you can't do these kinds of regional sports networks, they'll abandon the sports networks, my guess is, before they abandon the antitrust treatment they get. So what do you ask?
Or they'll modify. So I'll just give you an example. In 2012, there was a lawsuit that along these very same lines against a few teams. And what ended up happening is that the judge ruled that the antitrust exemption does not apply to the broadcast of the game. So in other words, they are not allowed to collude or have a monopoly on the broadcast rights. They ended up settling with the fans, so to speak, and reduced the ticket or the cable package price quite a bit in comparison to what they were going to charge otherwise.
You know, people in Los Angeles, a lot of them can't get the Dodgers games because their cable provider won't provide it because they don't want to pass the expense along. There are sports writers in Los Angeles who cannot physically watch the game in their homes. I'm sure you know that. And I think some of us are wondering if something like that could happen in Chicago, which would be a shame. Raja Krishnamurthy is a co-signer of a letter to Major League Baseball, the congressman from the Chicago suburbs. We're out of time, Congressman, but it's good to hear you. We'll be following this. Thanks for visiting with us.
Absolutely. Thank you, John.
Due to the forecast of inclement weather, this just in from the Chicago Cubs later this evening, the Cubs have shifted the start of tonight's series finale against the Pirates to 6:35. They've moved it up 30 minutes. They're starting at 6:35 tonight.
John, they've been listening to you.
What do you know?